Welcome back to the Dribble Option with RBKD. It is a old school hip hop hump day, way back rap Wednesday right here on the Triple Option. I'm Rod Babers hanging out with the real MVP, Brad Keltner, my man Kevin Dunn as well. You can always reach us via Twitter. Kevin Dunn is at Kevin Dunn 01, Brad Keltner at Brad Keltner, and I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse.
Rod, we're jumping up and down back here, man. We wish you were in here. That one got both of us fired up. Did you like this song?
Yeah, that's an old school one. Yeah, that's old school. I used to play that in the club all the time. And yep. I can't believe BK would be jamming that. I guess they still probably played it when BK was in the club.
Oh, yeah.
That's how good it was.
Yeah.
This is a timeless classic, man. This one ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. It's timeless. It is. And honestly, because I don't even know what genre it is because they're not really rapping. They call it hip-hop, but he's rapping. I don't think he ever raps at all.
No.
He's just a DJ giving you commands on what to do in the dance.
He's just kind of yelling
really
random stuff.
The dance moves.
Yeah, he's just kind of yelling stuff the whole time over a really badass beat, and then he clears his throat every minute.
It's pretty much a it's pretty much a PA guy, Rod. We should call it the Ray Clay. I mean, this is what was. Right. The man in the middle.
No, it works, though. I mean, you're right, it's a timeless. Like, at my wedding, this song is probably going to play.
Beautiful.
It's got to play at the wedding.
This is the first dance. This is the first dance for y'all, right? This one?
Or is this the dance with the girlfriend?
Exactly. I don't know if that one will work out, but it's the first dance. But it definitely will be one of the jams at the wedding. All right. Well, let's get back to Sark Week here, gentlemen. It's been Sark Week ever since Steve Sarkisian was introduced as the new head football coach at the University of Texas. And I thought the media did a pretty good job of hitting him up with a variety of questions from different angles. We talked about the eyes of Texas, which has become a big topic of conversation already. Of course, that one was easy to discuss nationally. That's probably the one people grabbed a hold of probably first and foremost. But there are a lot of good cuts out there. Another one that I don't know if it went viral, but definitely regionally, it was seen as an important quote from Steve Sarkisian. And it was about the former rivalry with the Texas A&M Aggies. And the Aggies, of course, had a really good year this year, top five team. Tom Herman was asked about it. Charlie Strong before him was asked about it. And BK, you expect Sark to be asked about it too. And he was asked about the rivalry with the Aggies and whether he wanted to rekindle that rivalry.
I would love to play that game. I think it'd be great for the state of Texas. I would look forward to it.
That's it. That was the whole answer, guys.
I know.
4 seconds.
I think it was Bob who asked that. I'm not sure he got everything he wanted out of that, but obviously the 536 yards against A&M, that was fun. But I'm fine with that. I mean, honestly, I'm fine if we don't ask that question for the next 5 years. Like, I mean, what is a coach going to say there, BK? And how much power do they have to make that happen?
It's low-hanging fruit for the media.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, love Bob and think Bob's really damn good. So if that was Bob or whoever it was, it's not a shot at them.
I don't think it was Bob.
It was, okay.
Well, here, no, I am was, here I am dragging
I
Bob, and it wouldn't
say,
have been Bob.
You're taking shots at the
That's
wrong guy.
That's how cool
here.
Bob is, though. Bob will text me. He'll get a kick out of that.
It wasn't Bob. Who was it, BK?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I don't want to mention any other names.
Yeah, I know.
We'll start calling out media members one at a time.
We're friends with a lot of these people, so yeah. I don't want to call anyone out.
No, I mean, you figured it would be asked. And look, ultimately, the decision comes from way above Steve Sarkisian, right? It's not the head coach who decides if that game is going to get played or not.
No.
Whether it's Sark or Herman or Charlie, it's a cool question. And obviously, the quotes go at least regionally viral, like you said, Rod B., but ultimately, it's more important people who will make the final call on whether or not we play this game again.
Rod, hate to be bitter, Barry, about this, but it's a tired question for me. Like, there's so many other things I want to find out that how Sark's going to build this thing than kind of the stock answer that every coach is going to have to give on that. Yeah, it's a great rivalry, and you know if they want to play it, that'd be great. But I'm going to listen to my boss.
Yeah, I respect the fact they asked the question. And I'm with you. I think a lot of people that are probably done with it, they've already moved on. And I think there are, I don't know if it's a majority. I don't know if it's split down the middle. I don't know if it's a minority. But there are some Longhorn fans and some Aggie fans that have moved on. And they believe both programs have bigger fish to fry. I know Chad Hastings is one of these people. He's talked about it. And I think he had actually a really eloquent, articulate take today about it that you should listen to. So go podcast Chad and Trey if you can. But as an Aggie, I thought he made a good point. He said they both have a crimson problem. He said the Longhorns got to figure out a way to overcome and overtake Oklahoma and win the damn Big 12. And the Aggies sure as hell got their hands full trying to figure out how to beat Bama. And at least now they're in at least a conversation and having a realistic conversation about beating Bama. Like before, it's like, oh, beating Bama, you need to worry about just being a competent program that can get back to winning, you know, 8, 9, 10 games consistently. Well, now Jimbo Fisher's got that program rolling. Oh, yeah, they can have the conversation. All right, how do we beat Bama? How are we going to beat Bama? What does it take to beat Bama? And, yeah, I don't really know if playing Texas for A&M or playing A&M for Texas helps you with those goals. And I think Chad put that in a really cool way.
Yeah. They did lose 52-24, but that's also what Ohio State lost to Alabama by. So, I mean, maybe the question of how close they're getting to Alabama, you can kind of throw that in there. But I just think it's – I mean, BK, it'd be like me asking you about maybe what you want to do with helping out poverty issues, and it may be a legitimate question and you may have some good ideas on it, but you don't have enough power to actually make enough change happen, and Sark can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and his answer was to the point. I mean, I like his answer. I like that he said yes for a number of reasons. I mean, number one, I want the game to be played, and I agree with Chad what he has to say. Both schools have bigger fish to fry, right? The Longhorns need to find a way to win their first conference championship since 2009, right? That's our biggest priority here. There's no question about that, but I think the game's good for the state. Hell, I think it makes an impact on recruiting, right? So to help you get some of the players that can help you overcome your crimson problems, you might be able to solve that by bringing this game back. But also why I love it from Sark is he's just saying, he basically like went straight to the point, and to me that meant we're not ducking anybody. We're not dodging anybody.
Yeah.
And he's not the guy who schedules the games, right? I mean, Texas already has a gauntlet of a non-conference schedule set up for the next decade, and that predated Steve Sarkisian by a number of years. But I just like that mindset. Like, we're not scared of anybody. If it's A&M, if it's Alabama, if it's Georgia, it's whoever, we're going to welcome all challengers.
The last couple coaches that have come in, guys, the schedule that was already set for them, they weren't able to finish it out. I mean, schedules are set years in advance, but think about that, right? So when Tom Herman got here, there were games that were already scheduled, and then all of a sudden, he's gone. Same thing with Charlie. So you know what? I think he handled that well. I think he handled the whole press conference well. I know one of the things, and there were some really good questions. I know one of the things that I really wanted to find out about with him and just how much he would talk about it is, give me specific examples of the influence that a guy like Pete Carroll or Nick Saban had on Steve Sarkisian. I mean, that's what we're banking on, right? I mean, that was a weird thing about Herman when the whole Urban relationship fizzled. It's like, wait a minute. Like, you know, that's one of the three programs we want to be, and a lot of what we think about you is because of that. Sark was asked about the influence Carroll and Saban had on him.
Yeah, I think the one thing, Coach Carroll and Coach Saban, I think the end result is very clear. They both want to win. They both want to develop young men into grown men. I think they have the best interests of their players at heart. But the one lesson I got out of it was they did it their own way. We all see Pete Carroll on the sidelines, the fun, energetic, upbeat personality that he has. And then we all see Nick Saban on the sidelines and the stern focus and drive that he has. Both of which work, right? They've both worked for each of them. Pete Carroll's a national championship in college, Super Bowl champion in the NFL. Nick Saban, arguably the greatest college football coach of all time, 7 national championships, both of which work. And what I got out of it was you got to know who you are, you got to have a belief in who you are, and you have to stick to your beliefs. Neither of which wavered for those guys. I think it took them some time to figure out who they were. Clearly, I've had that time to do that, and I think once you can put those principles in place and stick to your guns, and it's not 1 year we're this, the next year we're that, you believe in who you are. And at that point, then you start to build your program. And I think those two guys actually showed me two different ways of doing it, both of which were effective.
Interesting answer. So the adversity and also age, there's a lot of truth to that. You're going to find out more of who you are. But it's also important, and Saban has really showed this, and Carroll has as well. I mean, both those guys are like Benjamin Button in this whole process. I mean, they're getting, you know, Saban looks younger. God knows how long he's going to be hanging around doing all this, but they've stayed open-minded. So, Rod, I mean, I think it's something that you and I probably deal with in our 40s that, okay, we know a lot more who we are right now, and we've got basic principles, and we've got some ideals that we live by, but you can't get caught in those too much. You got to still be a human being that is growing and open-minded and willing to change if you need to change. And I think he's learned a lot from both those guys about doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you don't want to make the mistakes that oftentimes the coaches who own the Belichickian coaching tree make, where they try to replicate Belichick. They try to do it like Belichick, personality like Belichick. Well, you're not Belichick, right? You can, there's certain aspects of his coaching style you can take, and there's certain ideological, like philosophical things you can take from his coaching style traits, but you really can't replicate exactly what he did. You can't do it the way he did it. So I do appreciate that Sark saying, no, I got to do it my way. Once again, giving my man Chad Hastings some props. Chad Hastings has a great saying, said, do the radio show only you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do the, you know, Chad Hastings can't do the radio show Rob B can do. Rob B can't do the show that Chad Hastings can do. You know, I mean, I can't do the show that Kevin Dunn can do, and Kevin Dunn can't do the show that Brad Keldner can do. Do the show that you can do. Do your style of radio, and do that to the best of your ability, and that will come off as entertaining and educational and informative. And flipping that to football, same way. I come from the John Madani radio tree, like y'all do, too.
I do, too, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I took a ton from John Madani.
He's got wide hips.
Right, we all took a ton from Jumma Daddy because he was awesome, and he was a great leader and also a great mentor. But I can't do radio exactly like Jumma Daddy. I got to do it my own way. I can't do it like Bucky. I got to do it my own way. So just like mm-hmm. that, Sark's got to do it his way. Yes, take some of what Pete Carroll did, whatever you can relate to yourself, and some of what Saban did. But if you try to do it exactly like they did it, you will fail.
I like that.
I guarantee you will fail.
I like the comparison. And just like with radio, BK, what Sark is talking about is if you do it that way, you're going to naturally be what? Authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And building those important relationships and being authentic and being genuine. And Rod, I'm glad you brought up Bill Belichick, because we've been talking about it a lot with the Houston Texans over the last couple of weeks. Hell, really, the last couple of years, they are trying to copy everything the Patriots have done. Right? I mean, hell, Cal McNair had to say it in his press conference where he was introducing Nick Caserio. He said, no, we're not trying to be Patriot South. He brought that up unprompted because he knows how many people are realizing or seeing that Houston's trying to do everything that New England did, and they're trying to copy that model almost verbatim to have the same success that the Patriots have had over the years. I love that Sark has worked with a couple of really, really good Hall of Fame caliber coaches. And as he mentioned in that audio, two guys with extremely different philosophies and extremely different personalities. So Sark's going to be able to grab stuff from both of them, and he's also going to realize that, hey, there's not one way to do this. I don't have to be stern like Nick Saban. I don't have to be kind of a jerk to the media. I don't have to go about it this way. Or I don't have to be losing my mind like Pete Carroll and high-fiving and jumping and hugging all my teammates 24/7, 365. Like, there's a way to do it your own way and still be successful. So I think, I mean, we're trying to figure out exactly what Sark can learn from all of his mentors and all of his previous stops. I think that's a really good thing, KD, is that he's been around two guys who have achieved the highest levels of success in this profession, who went about it their own way, which hopefully goes to what Sark was talking about, that he has to do it kind of his way.
Yeah, and that was more philosophical stuff. Obviously, there's stuff that he's not going to mention, nor should he, that'd be like, here's some other things that I learned from Nick Saban and Pete Carroll, like offensively or defensively. And I'm sure that stuff is there, but there's no reason to mention it. So, yeah, I liked that. I thought that was good stuff. And, I mean, it you know, players, we know this, players are going to be put first. And we actually got, I think, a clip on that as well, where for me, that is huge because it gets back to maximizing the talent. And I'm pretty sure Sark's going to be able to do that.
You know, everything we're going to do in this program is going to be centered around what is best for our players. Our goal is to put our players in the best position to be successful, whether that's in life, whether that's on the football field, or in the classroom. They will be the priority of our program, and we will make sure we have everything in place around surrounding them to put them in the best position to do that. And I think that starts with building authentic relationships with them. I think it's getting to know them, and that'll be one of the key components here as I'm getting now on campus here of getting to know our football team and getting to know our players individually, because I think it's critically important to have that relationship for them to be able to open up to me and for me to be able to open up to them.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. And I kind of opened up the show with this earlier today, right? That was a consistent theme in the responses from Steve Sarkisian. He repeatedly mentioned how important the players were and how important those relationships are. And you have to have them with your current players. You have to have them with recruits. You have to have them with your assistant coaches. You have to have them with high school football coaches, right, to build those relationships and obviously help you recruit from across the state and across the country. It just seemed like a genuine plea, and I think that genuineness is going to help him out a lot here at Texas. And, Rod, we've talked about it. Look, I mean, you obviously have more perspective than any of us when it comes to being a recruit and being a college football player, but golly, it's changed so much over the last decade, right? With the advent of the transfer portal, hell, now we're about to have this one-time transfer rule to where you don't even have to sit out a year if you transfer. Yeah. You've got all the numbers about how many quarterbacks transfer seemingly year in and year out. Like, it's so important to build authentic, genuine relationships because players are looking out for themselves. And they should, because players don't get oh hell of a lot from the NCAA being collegiate student-athletes. But they're looking out for themselves. And if they believe that their coach does not have their best interest in mind, they're going to leave. They're going to transfer. They're going to opt out. They're going to leave a year early. They're going to leave your program, and that is not healthy. So I think relationships, always important, any line of work. But nowadays, in this profession, more important than they've ever been, Rod.
Yeah, I mean, it's and I agree with all that, and I think you're right. I mean, there are a number of other factors that have completely changed the entire landscape of recruiting, the identity of the business, social media. I mean, talk about authentic relationships. There's anything more disingenuous than social media, and yet that's where all of your prospects are. That it's a huge influence on them. They grew up as social media conscious entities, so you have to address them in that form, and that's something a lot of coaches, I don't know if they've mastered it just yet. So I think that's a big part of it. And I'll say this: when I was being recruited, there was this line they would throw out there all the time, and Coach Brew would use it too. And I know it's no longer true. You know, you have to recruit a prospect and to get them to campus, and then once you get them to campus, you de-recruit them,
break them down. Right?
I pump a head up and I tell them how great they are, as Mac Brown would say, put all this sugar on their back as I recruit them to get to Texas. Then once they get here, I gotta break them down, right? I gotta smash that ego. I gotta break them down and build them up in my own image, if you will. That is no longer the case. That was the case when we had no options, when there were no player rights,
no portal.
There wasn't a player empowerment movement. But now you got the portal. Now you're going to get, you know, maybe the one-time transfer rule. Now you got social media. If my coach is dropping the N-bomb, you know what I can do? I can go on social media and say, hey, he's dropping the N-bomb, and I can get nationally people to pay attention to me. You didn't have that back in the
day. Rod, you can record it.
Now you have an accountability structure for these coaches, not only to make sure they're on their best behavior and not acting inappropriately, but also to make sure that you are also held accountable to the things that you recruited me here to say. When you recruited me here, you said I was going to have this, and I was going to have this, and I was going to have that. And if you don't promise, you don't follow through with that promise, then I'm going to transfer, period. So I think it's making the recruiting process more authentic too, KD.
Yeah, no, I absolutely think it is. I think it makes it more authentic, and it's an interesting dynamic because I understand why they want to break guys down. You got to be careful with doing that, and they can go guy to guy. But that's also one of the first things I mentioned from people that have worked with Sark. They told me, they said, this guy reads people really well. And BK, I threw a little compliment out at you that you do that really well. Sometimes that's just a skill, and everyone's going to be different, and you can be different every day, right?
You can't even read!
where you're trying to read people and really read their emotions. I think he's really good at that, and I'm not worried about how that's going to work out. It was a problem with Tom Herman.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Good stuff from Steve Sarkisian at his introductory press conference yesterday.
Quickly, breaking news here. Great breaking news. Rod, it's been a rough day. I know it feels like we're probably picking on Houston, but I got some good news, really good news.
Please.
Big news.
The Astros have signed longtime Dodger reliever Pedro Baez to a 2-year deal.
Oh.
You fixed it. You fixed the day. This is big. The bullpen needed that. I mean, he's 70, but still.
Oh. He's also the slowest worker in baseball.
He really is.
He takes forever in between pitches. Oh, man.
He was probably I'm looking at one rank here. He was the 34th best free agent available.
Wow.
So, you know, that's
go.
How bad it's been for Houston. You'll take that as good news.
Take what you can get, man. Take
no
what you
kidding.
Can get.
No kidding. My goodness. What wow. a day. For Houston. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. Rod Babers, Kevin Dunn, BK with y'all on a Wednesday. We've got the BK Lounge coming up. We're going to bring back an old bit from the midday program. That's right, BK's Parental Advice of
nice.
The Week comes your way next.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here.
Oh, the band is out on the field.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
I don't believe what I just saw.
Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Chalmers for the tie.
Got it.
It's 2 seconds.
Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Oh, wow. In your life have you seen anything like that?
You believe in miracles yet?
Now. It's time to step inside the BK Lounge. Here's your host.
Who the hell is
Brad Kellner?
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want. You know I got it, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the BK Lounge. January 13th, 2021 edition of the Lounge. Alongside Kevin Dunn and Rod Babers, I'm BK Brad Kellner. And this edition of the BK Lounge is brought to you by Audio Visual Consultations. Give them a call, 255-8678, to get the home TV setup of your dreams. All right, gentlemen, we're talking parenting today here on the BK Lounge. And everybody loves to hear a 26-year-old with no kids advice on how to raise their kids, right?
Yeah, or to go with that, the two older guys that don't have kids either.
Right. Yes, we are the foremost authorities on all things parenting.
I was at the vet all day long, and I'm trying to keep this cat alive, damn it. So that's the closest thing I got. I've been a good uncle, too.
Yeah, I've got some sisters. They're all alive.
Nice.
Rod's a good pet owner.
Yeah.
Rod's going to be a good dad.
Yeah.
I hope so.
No, you are. Yeah, you are.
That makes one of us. So this story, guys, we've got to play the sounder from an old midday show bit that Trey and I used to do. This was only on occasion where we did this, but I thought it made for some good times. It is
Brad Kellner's Parental Advice of the Week, sponsored by Dying Alone.
My favorite sponsor of all time, wow. Dying Alone. We appreciate their support of that former bit. But usually the way we did it on the midday show was, you know, Trey would bring up stories, real-life situations from his two kids, right, from being a parent of his two children. And they were young at the time, I guess younger than they are now. That's how aging works.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just tell me stories or situations that his kids were involved in, and he'd ask for my advice. Like, if I were a parent, what would I do in this situation? So I want to kind of flip that and spin this to you guys and ask, I don't know if this is necessarily advice, but I want to know if y'all think this is okay for this parent to do what she did. This is 35-year-old Stephanie Gaudu from New Hampshire.
She's not Gaudu?
G-O-D-D-U.
Okay, yeah.
We're going Gaudu here. New Hampshire mother of three. She was arrested on a charge of child endangerment. Well, what did she do? She sent her three-year-old child to daycare in a Lyft by herself. So she ordered the Lyft. Mother ordered the Lyft, puts the kid in there. The kid made it to daycare, no problem. The kid arrived safely, but obviously no mom on the other side. So the daycare workers just see this car pull up. There's a three-year-old in the back, and she's going to daycare. But she was arrested for that and charged with endangering the welfare of a child, also charged with resisting arrest. We'll get to those details in a second, but fair or foul? Like, is this okay? Maybe not at the age of three, but is there a certain age where you can be allowed to send your child in an Uber, a Lyft, or a cab without the parent involved?
Yes, it's just not three.
Yeah.
There's an age. I'm not going to say it now, but I know some people who have done it, like having their kids dropped off at like middle school before, so I know it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can get into the larger problem of trying to actually raise someone and raise a young mind and say, you know, yeah, it's okay to drop them off. You could have the limo drop them off at 10 or some taxi or Uber or something mm-hmm. like that, but are you really being a parent? Now, looking at her right here, and it says she was incoherent and disoriented.
Yeah.
The kid had to get there. She didn't. She was in no shape to be driving. And I don't know, BK, because I don't. Everyone's going to look at things differently, and people are going to have different parenting styles. And there are some people that would say, you got to take that kid away, but you don't necessarily need to take the kid away. This one, the more I look at it and reading about it, I think you may have to take the kid away.
Yeah, also when the cops showed up, apparently her 3-month-old child was covered in urine. And strapped to a carrier seat within 6 feet of the heater.
That's the worst thing about three-month-olds.
So not even socially distanced away from the heater, which is a bad bit right there. So, yeah, she was arrested. But, man, I think there's almost like a business opportunity there. Like Uber and Lyft, they do background checks, but they're so casual, right? They're so laissez-faire, and they'll hire just about anybody. And look, every criminal has to commit their first crime at some point, right? So just because you've been clean before doesn't mean you're going to be clean forever. And human trafficking is a huge, huge problem. It's a cause that I know Bucky is very, very close with, right? Working with the Refuge Ranch here in Central Texas. But I feel like if there's a way where you could have, and maybe this is just sort of babysitters in general, but like a service to where parents could order rides for their children. And these people are so clean, they're so background checked, like they've worked with kids before. I feel like that's something that could actually work and maybe isn't something that would be so criticized as much as this one is.
It started out here in Westlake, see how it goes.
Yeah. Like it might be something there.
That's your demo. That's your demo right there.
Like a taxi daycare mom or something like that. I don't know, but I thought that was a pretty interesting story. Just imagine driving Uber and a 3-year-old is your passenger. Like a 3-year-old gets in and start to, how do you make conversation with a 3-year-old? Those chats are always awkward in general. I got to talk to a baby. I don't know how that works.
You guys know
and what?
Go ahead, Rod.
And go ahead, Katie.
No, go ahead, brother. What do you got?
No, I was going to say what, and I know it's really horrible for you to send a 3-year-old to a school. That's not cool, and it deserves a welfare check. That's what mm-hmm. the Child Protective Services, that's what mm-hmm. they'll do, a welfare check.
Yep.
And once they go check, then they want to know the circumstances of what happened, and then they do inspect the residence usually. And that's when they find all of the other, what we've seen as inappropriate or unlawful violations, if you will, in terms of their code, what is acceptable by their code of standard. So that's a bigger issue, too. That was just a red flag when the child pulled up there, you know,
yeah,
without a parent in an Uber. But once they went to the house, they probably saw some stuff and went, all right, you know what, you need to go to jail, and we need to start the process of you being under supervision with this child.
Yeah, you don't need your bong out with your 3-month and 3-year-old. I didn't read that there was a bong out, but she looks like you have no idea what that place would look like. Yeah, but this is also where, you know, we see some of these Orwellian thoughts that are out there now, where if you don't believe in what I believe, then I want you canceled. I want you silenced, mm-hmm. right? I want to take things away from you. I want you to go to literally be in rags and selling fruit on the side. People want to destroy people so much. So I want to be really careful with stuff like this. And I think you should probably lean towards, well, you know, we don't have enough evidence to actually pull this kid. But reading all this, I mean, this does seem like Rod said, time for a welfare check. They did that, and maybe time to jump in,
yeah,
intervene.
Having a 3-month-old covered in urine, strapped to a carrier,
they do
seat
pee a lot
within 6 feet of a heater.
Yeah,
it's a bad bit right there. Like that's worse than putting a 3-year-old in an Uber. But
what kind of heater?
We
were talking
bad.
Space heater. Space heater. The kid's fine.
Doesn't say. It's New Hampshire, so.
All right. Now, if you're talking like a radiator, you got to watch out with that.
A little different,
yeah.
You know, like a Christmas story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Dad's dealing with that thing
right.
all the time and dropping F-bombs left and right. All right, how about this one, guys, real quick before we get out of here? We've talked about this before, but refresh my memory. What are y'all's takes on autonomous vehicles? You feel strongly in favor or against the self-driving cars?
It's happening. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're used to it. It's happening.
It's happening, and I don't like it.
Okay. Well, it's happening for sure. And there's a self-driving truck company, like semi-truck company, called Kodiak Robotics. that recently hit a milestone on Texas roadways. So this company, Kodiak Robotics, is based in Mountain View, California, but they've been performing a lot of their operations out of North Texas, and they are
tax reasons.
They are big time. Yep, tax reasons, a big part of it. But how about this, guys? Recently, last week, Kodiak completed two 400-mile round-trip commercial shipments between Dallas and Houston that relied only on the truck's autonomous driving system. It occurred a year and a half after Kodiak's first freight delivery, but 400 miles, two round-trip shipments from Dallas to Houston. And there were two human operators in the vehicles on the road for safety, and they will take control over the truck if needed, if there's like construction or just a random situation that the autonomous vehicle can't deal with, the artificial intelligence can't deal with. But, man, this thing is happening, guys, and it's happening in our state. And once again, you've got semis taking hours-long road trips without any – I mean, they didn't need any human assistance on these trips, right? They didn't deal with anything. So the whole thing was autonomous, not just you get on the highway, then you turn on some feature. No, they literally did the entire trip from Lancaster, which is south, just south of downtown Dallas.
Larry Dibbles.
Down to Houston. Yes, Larry Dibbles. To Houston and back. So it's coming, guys. It's coming. And I think I'm most in favor of this with semi-trucks, right, with those 18-wheelers out on the roads. I mean, obviously, if you get hit by one of those, the thought of that is scary as hell. But, man, those drivers work the most ridiculously long hours ever. They're out on the road all the time. And most of the accidents you hear involving semis are because, like, the driver fell asleep.
Yeah.
Had asleep at the wheel. They're driving 18-hour shifts at a time.
Which is tough to do with a 96-ounce Pepsi.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of drugs and a huge Mountain Dew and a bunch of chips in there as well. But, like, that, you know, I'm scared of the whole autonomous vehicle thing because I like being in control. But I think, Rod, that would be, like, the thing I'm most in favor of with the autonomous vehicle is taking away some of those 16, 18-hour road trip shifts that these truck drivers have to have.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's actually where they're making a lot of their money. Ultimately, goal is for these autonomous vehicles running on artificial intelligence that they'll be able to – they'll have to pay drivers less, or at least they'll be able to pay drivers less. And then over 5 to 10 years, these trucks will pay for themselves. And after that, you're talking about a huge profit margin for these trucking companies when they start to get a whole fleet of these autonomous vehicles, as opposed to paying for, the salaries and health insurance of a person. So it is bad for those people. Some people are going to be put out of work because of it. But in terms of more efficient, safe roads, yeah, it's going to be more efficient, safe roadways, no question.
Yeah, it's taken away a lot of jobs, though. And at some point, we got to balance out.
Well, they'll still have people in the trucks.
Okay, so they're still
in
there.
They won't pay them as much, though.
Yeah, they won't pay them as much, but the jobs, as of right now, the jobs
are still
going to
be there. Yeah, but, I mean, they're going to be decreased, like Rod said. Yeah. So, I don't know, just balancing technology and also this huge chasm where we're just, you know, the haves and have-nots only grows. And so I'm not really worried about the trucking company. I'm worried about more the people that, you know, need jobs.
For sure. We'll see how this thing progresses. But, yeah, some breaking sort of news in regards to autonomous vehicles here in the great state of Texas. Before we get out of here, we'll have what's on tap, but we also have some breaking news in regards to Steve Sarkisian's coaching staff. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned. It's next.
Pop a top again.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash?
Oh, yeah. I've been known to drink a beer or two.
I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds. It's only my opinion, sir.
I got beer.
I got bottled breast milk.
Why don't we start with the beer?
Okay.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Wait, it's already 5 o'clock here. It's time for What's on Tap.
How about a nice cool drink?
That's really
man,
good.
That's good.
Pop a top again. I've just got time for.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. We're getting ready to wrap things up. Been a great show. Hope you've had a great time listening to the show. It's been a hell of a time bringing you the Triple Option today. We continue with Sark Week here on the Triple Option, and we have more breaking news as it relates to the coaching staff of Steve Sarkisian. BK, what you got? That's the good breaking news sounder. I'm expecting good news here.
Yeah, I just lost the official tweet, so I'll give you the summary. But it's being reported by Ian Fitzsimmons, who covers college football in the Metroplex and also does a little bit of work nationally as well. He is saying that Kyle Flood, the Alabama offensive line coach, is reportedly going to be joining Steve Sarkisian's staff here at Texas. Yes, here it is. The tweet from 31 minutes ago from Ian Fitzsimmons. Alabama's O-line coach Kyle Flood is leaving Tuscaloosa to join Steve Sarkisian at the University of Texas. He will be in Austin tomorrow. He was the architect of some of the best offensive lines in college football since he arrived at the Capstone. So a lot of local guys, KD, have been hinting towards this happening, but now it seems like it actually is going to happen. A big-time get for Steve Sarkisian.
It is. Even with Holman, Wiggins, I mean, all the names we heard, this one was one that I felt like probably was as important to him as the strength and conditioning coach, the guy he plucked out of Cal, who he had at Washington. But yeah, I mean, the offensive, he obviously liked Flood. Everything I've heard about Flood, everything I've seen about Flood, he has done a really good job. And we've talked about, Rod, the lack of a number of really good coaches at that position specifically and being able to teach technique. I think Texas has got a good one. We do know it's going to be the same question with him, Rod, that we have with Sark in general. What is it going to be like working with the Texas talent compared to the Alabama talent?
Yeah, I like the evolution of Sark. Once he met up with Kyle Flood, I think that's why he wanted to bring him with Bama when he got that opportunity to be the offensive coordinator. If you go watch his offenses, they're different. His run game principles and philosophy is different with Kyle Flood as his offensive line coach. And I think that has helped him take his game to the next level as a play caller. Even in the NFL that last year with Atlanta, that offense was much improved. And then when they went to Bama, of course, historically one of the great offenses. Texas has had, what, six different offensive line coaches in the last 10 years. He'll end up being the seventh offensive line coach they've had in the last 10 years. We know you got to develop that position. Jeff Howe has a great stat that the last blue-chip offensive lineman within the state to sign with Texas and also be drafted was Justin Blaylock. You got to go all the way back to that, 2002 class before they developed a blue-chip four- or five-star offensive lineman into a draftable prospect. Connor Williams, three stars. Cosme's a three-star. And Tony Hills was a tight end coming in. So, yeah, they need Kyle Flood to be as good as advertised. And right now there's nothing that leads me to believe that he is not.
Yeah, got to develop. That's the same thing for Sark, right? They have to develop the talent. There's a lot of talented offensive linemen on campus, at least in terms of the number of stars they had back when they were recruiting. Guys who are categorized as blue-chip guys, they just need to develop into something more than they have been.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. So I'm excited about that hire. I'm glad that he got that thing done. And, guys, I expect him to kind of make stuff more official as this week goes on. I don't think this is the last name that we're going to be talking about as an assistant coach for this week.
Big game tonight for the Horns, gentlemen.
What do you think about this? So, Tech?
Tech coming to town, number 15 in the country. Pregame starts at 7:30, tip-off at 8 o'clock, by the way, here on the Horn.
Got Eminem at guard.
Yeah, Mac McClung. Tech's got some players, man. I mean, they don't have that stereotypical point guard. Like, Mac McClung is kind of their point guard, but he's not the best distributor or facilitator of an offense. Their offense isn't that great. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country, but they go through lulls similar to what we saw from Shaka Smart's team over the last few years. That's kind of what Tech is doing on offense. One thing that worries me a little bit, guys, Texas fouls a lot. The Longhorns are 321st in the country in fouls committed per possession. Texas Tech ranks 5th in the country in free throw attempts. So stay out of foul trouble tonight, right? Don't give Tech easy points at the charity stripe. Don't get into foul trouble. And you've got a chance to extend this win streak to 7, guys.
Yeah, I mean, this has been fun. It's been fun watching this team. It's nice to have a winner, and it's definitely fun talking about the winner that we all hope Steve Sarkisian is going to be. We'll get back to more of that tomorrow, and who knows, maybe the staff will continue to be officially announced, but Kyle Flood will be the offensive line coach for Texas. Good hire for them. All right, we're going to be off for 30 here, but then right back in 30 minutes because we'll go to Sports Nation for 30, and then we've got pregame with Craig and Eddie getting you ready. 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip, Texas and Texas Tech. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Y'all have a great night. For Rod Babers, for Brad Callender, I'm Kevin Dunn. Hook 'em and peace, y'all.